Ah, so cool. This afternoon. But sweating is good to eliminate sickness. Let's get into the story. So, remember where we left off, that Tosu Gisei did not practice with Taiyo Kyogen. There was somebody in between the mystery character. So, Keizan says, the Chittagata's teaching of the true Dharma was intimately communicated between East and West. Sound familiar? From the Sandokai we chanted this morning. And the five schools of Zen flourished vigorously. Methods diverged, and the styles of the schools were somewhat different. There were phoenixes and dragons and elephants. I think all wondrous, noble creatures. In the Shuso ceremony that we do here, the Shuso says something like, dragons and elephants, let us bring forth the Dharma. Give me your questions. So, another one of these maybe a little bit strange terms of praise for the Zen assembly. Or a bunch of dragons and elephants and phoenixes. In all these different schools of Zen, he's saying there were phoenixes and dragons and elephants. They were not the same, but none was inferior. I Ching Hua Yen accorded with Da Yang in word and deed. That's this Totsu I Ching, Tosu Gisei, accorded with that, with Taiyo Kyogen, even though he never met him. It's hard to keep track of all these names. So, these two Soto ancestors accorded in word and deed. So, Totsu Gisei must really be called the descendant of the Soto line. Master Yuan Qian, who's this one that he actually practiced with, inherited the teaching from Shi Xian. This is in a Linji line of transmission, or Rinzai lineage. A phoenix must be not put in a dragon's nest. Therefore, Yuan Qian, after they practiced together, and he entrusted Tosu Gisei with the Dharma, he sent him to Zen teacher Yuan Tong Fa Xu. So, a phoenix must not be put in a dragon's nest. Means like these are all these great mysterious beings, and they're all equally worthy. But there's a difference too between Soto and Rinzai. We shouldn't just say it's all the same. And I think that's what is being pointed to in this whole long story of Keizan here. So anyway, if this looks like after Tosu's entrustment of Dharma has happened, he went to this other place, Yuan Tung Zen center. And when he arrived there, he didn't make inquiries, but just slept a lot. Like he didn't come to Dokusan or ask any questions. He would just sleep. An official at the monastery informed the teacher, Yuan Tung, there's a monk in the hall who just sleeps all day. You should enforce the rules. Yuan Tung said, well, who is he? And this official, like the director or the Eno or someone, said, the senior monk, Yi Qing, Totsu Gise. Yuan Tung said, that won't do. Let me test him. Another translation says, don't do anything about it yourself. Okay, I want to go check this out for myself. He took his staff and proceeded to the hall where he saw Totsu Gise actually sleeping in the zendo. He struck the floor and scolded Totsu and said, we have no spare food here to waste just so you can eat and sleep. Totsu Gise said, well, what do you want me to do? Yuan Tung said, well, why don't you ask some questions and do some zazen? And Totsu said, exquisite food does not tempt someone whose stomach is already full. I know zazen and, you know, your meeting with you are kind of exquisite food, but I've already had my fill. Thank you. Can I go back to sleep now? Yuan Tung said, what do you think about the fact that I don't very much acknowledge that? Totsu said, what's the point of waiting for acknowledgement? Kind of like, if, you know, if you don't like it, that doesn't bother me. So, confident? Arrogant? Or confident? Very fine line. Yuan Tung asked, well, who have you visited so far? Or what teachers have you practiced with? Totsu said, Fushan Yuan Chen, who, under whom he realized the way and received his Dharma. And then Yuan Tung said, I wondered about such obstinate laziness. Then they clasped hands and laughed together and went to the abbot's quarters and hung out. So, sounded like this teacher knew the other teacher and said, oh, if you practice with him, I trust your practice. Then maybe now I can see that it really is confidence instead of arrogance or laziness. Or, you know, you don't mind being arrogant and lazy. So just this person. Just be who you are, and I accept it. Because my friend Fu Shan Yuan Chen, it's just himself too. From then on, Totsu Gise's reputation in the Buddhist community spread far and wide. First he resided at Mount Bayun. Later he moved to Mount Totsu. All this is recorded in the Compendium of Five Lamps. Also, the continued record of the sayings of the ancient elders says that this teacher received the Dharma from Zen Master Yuan Chen. Yuan Chen had first studied with Dayang Ming'an. So this Rinzai teacher who passed him the Dharma had also studied, or had studied with Taiyo Kyogen, this previous chapter's Soto ancestor. He studied with him and was in complete accord with Da Yang's words and actions. In the end, Da Yang wanted to transmit the teachings of the tradition to him, along with the shoes and robe of his lineage. But in those days, they transmitted shoes. They don't do that anymore. But Yuan Chen refused them, saying that he had already received the Dharma from someone else. This is how the story is unfolding. Can you follow? That so this Rinzai teacher, Yuan Chen, had already practiced with various other teachers, and he received Dharma transmission from a Linji Rinzai teacher already. But then he went on to go practice with the Soto teacher Dayan, and they were in complete accord. So Dayan said, "I'd like to transmit my Dharma to you now." And he said, "I'm sorry, I already have somebody else's." And there are some lineages in America that where the people have like Dharma transmission from various different lineages. Like Maizumi Roshi's himself actually practiced and received some kind of certification from several different Soto and Rinzai teachers. And there's something beautiful about that, of not being exclusive, practicing with different teachers to the point of actually receiving their transmission. So we have that going on. And then there's some other, maybe more traditional Soto people. One modern Soto teacher said, "That's impossible. Once you've received the Dharma from one person, that's it for life. You can never break that. You can never undo it, and you can never receive somebody else's." And it looks like Dogen and the tradition kind of support that view too. There's like, you can practice with many teachers, but there's this kind of special kind of marriage that happens with one person. And that particular modern teacher said, you know, I'd say, "Well, why does it matter? What's his basis?" And I think one thing he said was, if it's really the meeting, the face-to-face meeting, it's totally complete. And so why would you go look for something else? You might still practice with other teachers to learn more and investigate different styles, but why do you need some other kind of like confirmation like that? It doesn't really make sense, according to him. So I could see that. I mean, I don't want to fall into either side. I think that there's different opinions about this matter in ancient and modern times. So anyway, Taiyo Kyogen wanted to transmit the teachings of the Soto tradition to him, but Yuan Chen refused them, saying that he'd already received the Dharma from someone else. So then Taiyo Kyogen lamented, "There is no one to whom I can transmit my branch." Yuan Chen, the Rinzai teacher, said, "The tradition of Dongshan, the Soto lineage, is exhausted and will be difficult to revive. Since you are advanced in years, if you have no one to transmit it to, then I will certainly hold the robe of faith for you and pass it on later to someone else." So this is this kind of surrogate parent kind of thing. And so there's several interesting things, I think, here. That one is that this great lineage of the Soto ancestors that was thriving for generations and is thriving now all around the world, how could it ever die out now in terms of like there's nobody left practicing it. But at this time, it looked like this was the Taiyo Kyogen was the last person in this lineage. That's how I understand it. There wasn't, maybe there were other Soto lineages that later died out themselves. Because now, all of them come through these ancestors. They all come through Dogen, at least in Japan. So there may be more story, I don't know about, in China, other branches. But it's interesting that Taiyo Kyogen was getting old. He couldn't find a successor, even though he was had practiced sincerely and was a great teacher. Maybe he felt like he wasn't quite fully in accord with anyone. It doesn't say what he was doing. Maybe he wasn't actually teaching. Maybe he was just wandering around, and that was part of it. Yeah.
So would that mean that at that time there was a soul transmission? Like for each ancestor there was one transmission?
I think not necessarily. No, because we know, like you can see Andy Ferguson's big lineage chart, where even in those earlier generations than this, there's one teacher with many successors. And then there's little side branches. But the side branches die out in the same way that this was about to die out. So they don't necessarily, they maybe go on for a few generations, but then there's no, at some point there's no successor, and it kind of ends. Maybe I'll have to check that out. I know it is a color-coded chart with the five schools of Chan in China with five different colors showing the lineages. But I don't know if they include this little link here. And I'll check that out. Yeah, maybe like a dotted line or something too, because he's kind of branches over there like that. By the way, that reminded me that Dogen himself received, even though he was kind of promoting this one person, one transmission thing, he himself received transmission from Rinzai and Soto. But then it looks like he didn't kind of like, he made the distinction on passing on the Soto part, because that, I think in his case, because that was the teacher he felt like he really met. In his youth, he received this from Myo Zen in Japan, and then he went to China and met this Soto teacher. But because of that, because of Dogen receiving those, all of you who have the blood vein document that you get at Jukai, if you may have looked at, it has the Soto and Rinzai ancestors, about that, like, who split off at the sixth ancestor, is where all these schools divide. So then you have Soto and Rinzai, they come down, and they meet again at Dogen, and then from Dogen there's one line down to the present day. And it says, even in the little, like, paragraph at the bottom, it says, observe that the Soto and Rinzai tracks are, or lineages are one track completely with no side roads, even stressing the point that it's all one circle of ancestors. And so because Dogen could do that, it looks like maybe this is another way of looking at that too, that this Yuan Shen had already received the Rinzai. He actually did receive the Soto too. That's why I think we could call him a Soto ancestor. It's, and then he passed on the Rinzai to some people and the Soto to other people. And so if we saw it like that, we should include him in our chanting. But it looks like the way the tradition looks at this is that he was really just holding it. What does that mean? He's just kind of like temporary hold. He's like, I'm a person. I can hold this for you and pass it on. But when I'm passing it on, I'm not involved. It sounds like that's what he's saying is, I'm not actually, I don't want to count myself as doing this because I have this other thing going, this Rinzai thing.
He's the custodian.
Custodian, like that, yeah. Yeah, but it's still coming through a person. It almost felt like, so there's still these face-to-face meetings. It's just an interesting point of ways to look at this, you know. And why all the fuss about Soto and Rinzai, right? Why make this distinction? You know, I'm a Rinzai person. That's my identity. But I'll hold the Soto thing to pass it on because you're a great practitioner. We've met, and I understand and actually deeply appreciate the Soto thing. And even though it's not my way, maybe that's part of the flavor. So... maybe. Yeah. So you could say it's sectarianism, making differences, and yet it seems like underlying it, it's like we really do make these distinctions and we really respect both. Because he's not arguing, he's like, I don't care about if your Soto thing dies out. He's not saying that, right? He's saying, oh, we really don't want that to die. It's not my thing, but I don't want it to die either. So I'll protect it for you and pass it on later to someone else. And Taiyo Kyogen agreed, saying, I will compose a verse and leave it with you as proof. And then you pass on this verse to whoever you find after I'm gone. And the verse says, the grass of Mount Dayang, Taiyo, depends on you for its value to grow. When different sprouts grow in profusion, deep and hidden, splendid roots are strong. Or another translation is, when unusual sprouts grow in profusion, deep and dense, splendid roots are strong. And then he told this surrogate custodian, he said, whoever receives this Dharma from you should remain hidden for 10 years before bringing it out in the open. Maybe he felt like, this is a kind of unusual thing that we're doing here, and let's not be hasty about it. So after you pass it on, please ask this person to kind of like lay low for a while. Later, this teacher, Tosu Gisei, and Yuan Chen met. Yuan Chen entrusted him with the essential teaching of the Soto school, the portrait of Dayang, who he never met, and his robe, saying, you inherit Dayang's line through me. Later, as expected, he appeared after 10 years as the inheritor of the Dharma of Dayang. Go ahead. Yeah, that's a good question. I think he, does he say this? He doesn't say how they met, but we did hear, well, kind of, we this morning, this was the story, was Tosu Gisei, who's the present ancestor here, was the one who studied these Abhidharma teachings and said three incalculable eons is a long time. What's the point of that? So then he went, listened to lectures on the Avatamsaka Sutra, and he had some insight. Then he went traveling to hear talks by Zen teachers. So he already had this whole practice going. And then somehow he doesn't say exactly how, but he ran into this Rinzai teacher. And then they had this conversation about, the teacher said, have you been wonderfully awakened to the subtle functioning? And Tosu said, even if I had, I should vomit it out. And the attendant said, oh, today he's like a sick man able to sweat. And Tosu said, stop yapping away like that. If you keep prattling on like this, then I'm going to vomit. So 3 years later, Yuan Chen brought out the essential teachings of the Soto school and revealed them to Tosu. 3 years later, so they practiced together for 3 years. And so it seems like there's something like, he maybe felt like there's some style or flavor here of this particular student that's more in accord with the Soto way. And I'm responsible to pass this on now before I die. So I think he's the one. So maybe it was like that. It says it like that. Yuan Chen brought out the essential teachings of the Soto line and revealed them to Totsu, who was in complete accord with them. So maybe when he was teaching the Jewel Mirror Samadhi or Dungshan's teaching, Tosu totally picked up on it. Oh, this guy's got some resonance with this Dungshan style. Maybe. But along those lines, thinking of it, because I think this is what's happening here. You could say, is it just a technicality about, well, let's keep these lineages clear? What's the point of, is it just technicality and, you know, bureaucracy? I hope not. I hope there's something to this, right? And I would propose that there's a way I understand this, that he's practicing this one thing and holding this other, is that there are actually these different styles, different flavors or styles of these different schools. And these five houses of Zen, of which Rinzai and Soto are two, and the only two that survive, the other three, are Yun Men, who is this great teacher. We have his record, but his lineage died out. Same with Fa Yin and the Guiyang. Lineages all ran out of successors at some point. So it happens. 3 out of 5, it happened. So I don't know, you know, where this was found, but I at some point met this Chinese Zen monk who was talking about these different styles and mentioned this, and I thought, that's so great. Where, you know, can you tell me about these little verse excerpts that define the style of these schools? Because how do you encapsulate the style of these schools? And he said, yeah, here's the thing. So I don't know where it's from, but it's the five Chinese schools. And there's a little verse that goes with each. And there's an even shorter little phrase that goes with each. And they're very, as usual, very abstruse Zen things that, you know, you hear them and you're like, I don't get, what's that about? They're just poetic phrases, right? But the I think these short ones that are called the central peak of these Osho's extensive records, the central peaks of the teacher's extensive records, kind of like the summary in two characters is what they are. The verses are four characters. We have the Chinese here. And so this is kind of like how I would translate them. The Soto style, the central peak of the Soto style is Sei Mitsu in Japanese. which means fine and close, or fine and intimate, or subtle intimacy, is the Soto style. When I saw that, I thought, how sweet. That's so great. And I have heard this phrase similar. This is Seimitsu. We have this in modern Japan. This is from China, right? But in Japan, this phrase, Menmitsu no Kafu. And Kafu is literally means the wind of the house. And it's a poetic way of saying the style of the school. These are called the five houses of Zen sometimes. So the wind is like the wind of the house is like the style of the particular tradition. So that's Kafu. And Menmitsu is this, it means, men is actually like cotton, but it means like the fine, dense weave of cotton fabric. And Mitsu means like intimate, close, dense, also. So this is like, Menmitsu is, you know, as intimate as woven cotton, and Seimitsu is like fine and intimate. So they're almost the same. Menmitsu no Kafu means the style of the school is this kind of subtle intimacy. And apparently in Japanese, this subtle intimacy also implies like very careful attention to detail. This is it. So you could say it's the intimacy between people, but it's also like intimately caring for like the a teacup when you pick it up, things like that. So we have that. And it really is, I think, a part of the flavor of Soto Zen, is you pick up the teacup carefully and slowly, you take care of little details, it's very gentle and loving care. Rinzai Zen has some of that, but a little different flavor. I think the current there's calligraphy on the Tassajara kitchen altar, and last time I was there anyway, it says Nenmitsu no Kafu. It says this careful attention to detail is the style of the school, or this subtle intimacy is the style of the school. I think it's anybody ever mention that calligraphy there?
Last one that we saw said I know just enough.
Oh. So it changes, and it's a little. Oh, okay. So it's kind of nice. The tenzos can like change the calligraphy on the altar there, and it kind of rotates through. They keep the old ones. Maybe it's sort of like the flavor of the tenzo. He's like, yeah, careful attention to detail. I like that, but Denny was maybe felt like, I know just enough. That's what I want to practice with this summer. So, if Soto is this subtle intimacy or careful attention to detail, the Linji Rinzai school in two characters, bitter and quick. Bitter and quick. A little bit like hard to swallow. And maybe a little forceful and a kind of rough and quick. So if you don't have time to pick up the teacup with two hands, one will do. Run! Yeah, it's samurai school. Mm-hmm. Yep. So those are the two. Careful attention to detail versus bitter and quick. And Yunmen's lineage is lofty and classic, or high and old, something like that. Fayen's two-character lineage description is cautious and strict. And Fayen, I know we have some records of Fayen himself. He has this, like, 10 guidelines for Zen schools, and where he really, like, says, you know, if you're a Zen teacher, these are, like, you shouldn't be doing it if you don't, not keeping, following these 10 things, and they're, like, they're super strict. Don't go near that. Gray Young. There you go. There you go. Mm-hmm. Too cautious and strict. No, it won't do. Okay, well then it dies. Guiyang, who's the Guishan and Yangshan school, is simple and clear, or succinct and bright. Yeah, but it died out too. Maybe it was too simple. One's too strict, one's too simple. But the ones that last bitter and quick, there's some people are really drawn to the bitter and quick. Like lots of young men with lots of energy and want to like throw themselves into total intensity. Leonard Cohen?
Leonard Cohen.
Yeah, I think he had some bitter sounding songs.
Wait, was he Rinzai?
Yeah, he's a Rinzai priest with Sasaki Roshi. Yeah, Leonard Cohen. That's not so bitter. That's kind of sweet. Yeah. So it may be that this teacher, Yuan Qian, had already inherited the bitter and quick style, and then this person who wanted to pass on the subtle intimacy style. I already have the bitter and quick style, and it's really like, you know, I resonate with it, and I want to pass that one on, but I love the subtle intimacy style too. It's, you know, it's not my main thing, but I love it enough that I'll hold it for you and pass it on to a kind of someone who's kind of into like subtle intimacy. Most of my students are like bitter and quick types. But then Tosu Gise came along, and maybe he felt like he seems less bitter and quick and more subtle and intimate. I noticed all the other monks just chug down their tea and run to the Zendo. Tosu Gise picks up his teacup and turns it so the face is a certain direction, offers it to the Buddha, and drinks it, puts it down and bows, and therefore he's late to everything. But it's okay. He's taking care of the details.
I want to ask, because I do come from that other tradition, where they didn't get along so well, the Catholics and the Protestants. Mm. How do you think it is that they were so able to be so respectful?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that is a phenomenal
thing. Mm-hmm.
Both of them, right?
Hmm.
Isn't that kind of mediate things a little in that?
Hopefully.
It didn't happen over on the Western side.
Hmm.
So, I mean,
people go into war.
It's a lot of, I am right and you mm-hmm. are wrong, and everybody is like that.
It's a natural human tendency.
I know.
And, you know,
it impresses me.
Well, it impresses me too. But it wasn't always the case, and isn't always the case, right? So there is rivalry between these schools in modern Japan, sometimes, and between temples. The very monastery where I practiced in Japan, Bukokuji, which interestingly is this mixed lineage. It's really, it's a Soto Zen temple, but my teacher's teacher I practice with there, Tongen Roshi, his teacher felt like Soto Zen was getting kind of like lame or something in his time in Japan. It wasn't actually dying out in terms of numbers of people, but he felt like the real juice and heart of it was kind of getting lost, and he felt like something was alive in the bitter quick Rinzai style. So he went, I think after inheriting Soto Dharma, he went to practice with a Rinzai teacher in Japan for some time. And I don't know if it was transmission, but received some kind of approval. They have a different system in Rinzai too for this kind of thing, like Inka, things like this. So, and he, that is part of Maizumi Roshi's lineage, is this, it's connected to this teacher I practice with. Anyway, it's this kind of smaller temple down the road, just down the road from this larger training monastery. They're both training monasteries, but Bukokuji is smaller and has no prestige. It's not like an official training monastery, whereas Hoshinji, literally like a few hundred yards down the road, you can see him, but you know, with just a garden in between. Is more supported, I think, because it's bigger. And I think there was some thing happened there where my teacher's teacher, after he died, there was some maybe disagreement of who should be the next abbot, right? Same old stories. And somebody else, there was some political thing going on, somebody else, but this was really like this kind of senior disciple of that teacher, so I think there was maybe some resentment. These are just the stories I heard. This was decades previously, but still, Bukokuji and Hoshinji, there wasn't like such a friendly feeling between them. It felt funny to me, like, because the Westerners would come in both of the places, had Westerners practicing there, and it was like you either got to go to one or the other, but like if you go to one, don't go like check out the other one, you know, like choose your kind of like your loyalty, sort of like that. So to the point where we'd be on Takuhatsu, you know, the alms collecting rounds, we'd sometimes go to different towns, but often we do it, the town's called Obama town, and some days in the winter, both the monks from both temples would be out on the streets in the long lines, weaving through the blocks, collecting rice and money, and then sometimes you go down the street and the line of the from Hoshinji was coming towards you, like at the other end of the street, and the instructions were, you know, don't meet up with them. Take the next turn, and they maybe have the same thing. So we never actually met, which somebody would veer off and like moving around different parts of the town. Like, so, you know, I don't think there was like hatred and animosity like that. It was just hard feelings, maybe. The teacher I practiced with, I really felt like very open-minded and compassionate. But human feelings are strong. Yes.
This is an interesting discussion right now, but for all the times that I practice at these spiritual temples, really isn't much talk of religion at all. Kind of a vague sense of like, it moves really fast, or you know, that kind of tap.
Mm-hmm.
Or I do the little stereotype.
Yeah.
But it's also a speech size.
anything else. You know, I was going to go to a session somewhere else.
Yeah, I might be too. I hear they have like short, they do have shorter periods of zazen, generally more like 25 minutes instead of 40, many of them. But there's a lot of like I think I mentioned, you know, like yelling in the zendo. Like, don't move, and like, you know, don't even sniffle.
How we got there, and I was looking so American. And these monks came in and were screaming at people at the. What was that about? Very,
very exciting. Yeah, well, you know, I think once you go into these Japanese Zen training monasteries, it's kind of intense wherever it is. So I think it's not that different, you know. They both carry the stick and hit people all the time. That's not particularly Rinzai thing. That's universal. And you know, depending on the place, you know, stricter than America in terms of like really kind of scolding and admonishing about all kinds of details constantly. Oh, introducing themselves. I thought maybe they were kind of like correcting the office people. They were just arriving. Oh. Well, there's that thing, kind of thing too, that, you know, I've heard about anyway, that when you come, if you're coming to practice at a place, it's kind of like just about really wholehearted expression. Same with the like Shuso ceremonies are like, they're all kind of like memorized. The whole thing's kind of like just following a script, but it's done like at the top of one's lungs. Both questions and answers. And I think it's a little Japanese for us. Or a lot. It's but I think the intention behind it is like really like direct, wholehearted expression, I think, is the feeling, but doesn't seem so subtle and intimate. So I think that's true. San Francisco Zen Center, we don't follow so much. I think it's nice to explore other traditions. I love exploring other spiritual traditions. So now, you know, here we, Nettie is practicing with us, and so she's from that that same mixed Soto Rinzai lineage. And then one of the great things that they do is they have this whole koan system from Hakuin, and they actually like methodically, you know, meet about each single koan, hundreds of them. And so she's gone through all that, so she's about to offer this koan study. Not exactly like going through it in the way they go through it, but bringing a little bit of that in here from her training, I think is really great. So, as foretold by the prediction, Tosu made his formal appearance after these 10 years of laying low. He came out as a teacher, offered incense at some temple, and said, "Do you know, monks, where this stick of incense comes from? It was not produced by heaven and earth, nor was it created by yin and yang. It has existed since before the first Buddha, and does not fit into categories such as sacred and mundane. Since Dipankara Buddha, who was long before the seven ancient Buddhas, even. It's been transmitted through these seven ancient Buddhas, Bibashi Butsu, Daiyosho, and so on, directly reached Cao Chi, the sixth ancestor, and its stream divided in China. In the beginning of 1064, this mountain monk was given the teaching and a verse by Zen Master Fu Shan Yuan Chen in person, and I was certainly confirmed. He said in his compassionate instruction, continue Da Yang's teaching in place of me. Although this mountain monk, me, did not know Da Yang, his teaching was inherited and passed on like this, through the recognition of a person capable of preserving it. I am determined not to turn my back on the kindness bestowed on me through Priest Fushan's bequest of Dharma. I respectfully offer this incense for Da Yang. Why? Mother and father are not parents of Buddhas. The Dharma is their parent. After that, he expounded Da Yang's teaching. Mother and father are not parents of Buddhas. The Dharma is their parent. Maybe implying that the particular people and their personalities are not the point. It's the Dharma coming through. So it doesn't matter if Da Yang's Dharma comes through this other person. So then it has a little story about Fushan, the nameless surrogate. And how he came to realize the way. At this point, Keizan says, you should realize that these two lines of Qingyuan and Nanyuan, or Soto and Rinzai, are fundamentally not separate. Because he was sad that Da Yang's tradition might fall apart, Yuan Chen became his surrogate and transmitted Da Yang's essential teaching. However, followers of our own tradition say that Nanyue's, the Rinzai line, is inferior and that the Soto teaching is superior. So he's saying, people these days around me are saying that. So, Linji people also say that Dungshan's teaching died out with Da Yang and was helped by Linji followers. See, really Soto died out, it's really actually Rinzai, you know, it's really our thing. Some of them said both sides appear to be ignorant of the Dharma, whether our school or theirs. If they're true people, neither can be doubted. Why? Qingyuan and Nanyuan were both followers of Cao Qi, the sixth ancestor, like two horns on a bull's head. Therefore, Yao Shan was enlightened with Matsu, but then became Shuto's heir. Tan Xia was also enlightened with Matsu and succeeded Shuto. So these are some stories that we have in our tradition where somebody actually like had some great insight with one person, but then he later went on to practice with another person and received their Dharma. It's okay to mix it up. There is truly neither superiority nor inferiority in the flesh and bones of brothers. However, we say that only our ancestral teachers are true heirs while others are offshoots. You must realize that Rinzai followers are excellent and our own followers are excellent. If something were lacking in Rinzai Zen or if it were inferior, Yuan Qian would have succeeded Da Yang. Some kind of like proof for it, right? If he said, oh, Rinzai's not, you know, he said, he's the one who said, I already have this Rinzai lineage, so I can't receive yours. If he felt like, I have this Rinzai lineage, but it's actually inferior, I'd rather have your Soto one, he would have done that, but he didn't. And we honor this him as a true person. So if there was something inferior about Da Yang or something wrong, how could Yuan Zhen transmit the Dharma to Totsu. Thus, monks, don't quarrel about the five houses of Zen. Just clarify mind. This is the true Dharma of all Buddhas. How can you disagree concerning self and other? You must not discriminate superior and inferior. He wants to go on a little bit more here. He's saying, however, there's this one Hung Chao Fen record of Shermen and Lin Chen, the keeper of the old tower. Basically, there's this teacher who lived roughly 100 years after Yun Men. Remember, Yun Men is one of the five schools that died out. So it had died out, and there's this one person who lived about 100 years later, but he called himself Yun Men's heir. This record is saying this, and then this record also brings up this case and says, well, this Tosu Gise never actually knew Taiyo Kyogen, but he never doubted that he was Taiyo's heir. Those two old fellows did it like this because of the transmission words and were content with that. They took themselves very seriously, but the Dharma very lightly. So this is like, there's somebody basically who's criticizing this thing that happened here and saying, if you're saying that you're Dai Yang's heir, it really doesn't count because you never met him. That's the point. Yeah. And then Keizan now critiques this text.
This,
he didn't. Yeah. So what about Shakyamuni Buddha? I mean, we do sometimes say that the seven Buddhas before Buddha, the seven ancient Buddhas, were like Shakyamuni's teacher. And Dogen wrote this essay of Shobo Genzo Menju, this face-to-face transmission. He addresses this point. He said, well, what about Shakyamuni Buddha? And I think he does his Dogen thing and turns it all around and says, well, actually, when Shakyamuni Buddha met, I think he says he met Kashyapa Buddha in this past eon. And he says, don't doubt that they met face to face, even though it was different eons. Yeah. So Dogen does give that leeway. But then Dogen actually does criticize this Yun Men person, though. This person who didn't meet face to face. Because it's so into this intimate meeting, and maybe he was critical because, you can appreciate, it's because he felt like I read Yun Men's teaching and feel like total accord with that, and therefore I'm his heir. And Dogen said, well, but you should make this more human. I think this may be one way to look at it. You're just getting it through his written record. You should, that's great to appreciate Yun Men, but you should also meet in the flesh and blood, meet someone. I think is what Dogen's emphasizing. So much about this face-to-face meeting. And I think it's just the most simplest way to look at it is it's just so very human, and the humanity of meeting is what keeps the Dharma flourishing. So somebody could have some great insight, really more profound insight than other people who meet, I think it's possible, and then start their own lineage. This happens in America, not unfrequently. And there, I think there's maybe value in it too. I think there's some. It's not necessarily a negative thing. But there's also some value in this particular style that we inherit through Dogen. He's really emphasizing this human meeting thing. He just values so much. And you know how Dogen can get critical, so he picks up on this story. But Kazan here is saying, as I reflect on this criticism of these people who didn't meet, he actually doesn't address the Yunmen issue. He just addresses the issue at hand because he wants to say, I think this meeting actually happened because people did meet here. I think that this ancient text that criticizes them seems to misunderstand something. Why? Because Dayang's Buddha Dharma was entrusted to Yuan Qian, the Rinzai teacher. That's beyond doubt, especially since he left proof when he found someone in Yuan Qian. There's no question that Tosu fulfilled this prophecy. If this text, this critical text doubts that the Dharma was bequeathed to this Rinzai teacher, then Dayang's transmission would also be in doubt. The reliable instructions of the ancestral teachers cannot be compared with confused ordinary events. Even ordinary people consider the words of a real person to be proof. How much more did Yuan Qian, a person who knew the Dharma, have Dayang's face-to-face transmission and accord with him in word and spirit? And so on and so on. The life of the Buddha ancestors continues without beginning or end. It transcends past, present, and future. Teacher and disciple do not differ. They become one like twining vines wrapped around a gourd. You can say they're one. Everyone from Ta Yang to Yuan Qian and Totsu came to be the one Ta Yang. In the end, Shakyamuni continues through India, China, and Japan down to the present. Such being the innermost reality of the Buddha ancestors, how can Yuan Qian be doubted? If you doubt Yuan Qian, why didn't Mahakashyapa doubt Shakyamuni? Why didn't the second Chinese ancestor doubt Bodhidharma? Buddha ancestors cannot be deceived. They esteem selflessness in the Buddha Dharma, and in this way it's inherited and continued. And so on and so on. Now too, when a suitable vessel for the Dharma cannot be found, it can be temporarily entrusted to a well-informed person. I think we do see something like this maybe going on in America too. Like Beata recently came and, different Beata. Beata Chapman, who was a very close student of Darlene Cohen, and she was ordained with Darlene in this Zendo, and practiced closely with Darlene. I think they had a really strong connection. They really like met. They accorded. I think they accorded. Yeah, and then Darlene started dying, and Beata hadn't been ordained that long. It wasn't time to do this transmission, but she felt like, I wish I could pass this on. So, as I understand it, she kind of asked her husband, Tony, who had a slightly different lineage. It was Soto lineage, but it was through a different teacher than Darlene. Said, can you pass this Dharma on to Beata for me? So I think that Tony was kind of like the surrogate. And it's a little tricky. Because I think Beata would say, really, Darlene is my most intimate teacher. But when she came here to tell us about it just a few weeks ago, she said, my teacher, Tony, because they had an intimate face-to-face meeting, just ceremonially enacted that. So it's harder to discern, maybe. Tony's, yeah. So it's nice when people live long. It's nice when people live long. And it doesn't always happen. And then things, you know. Suzuki Roshi died very young. Koban died too young. So people can help pass on, you know, in this kind of like official way. Again, I think we could argue this whole thing of like, why is it's so technical? Does it really matter? You practice with this teacher and you met them and you accord with them. Isn't that enough? Isn't that enough? So then there's something else. What is this like kind of ceremonial enactment? Suzuki Roshi. I think kind of about that point, maybe. Suzuki Roshi. In 1965, a student asks Suzuki Roshi, could you speak about this transmission the master gives the student who's enlightened? And Suzuki Roshi says, transmission is the symbol of perfect understanding of the transmitted way from Buddha. It's a cover of Buddhism. He's going to go on to explain this. It's a cover. And the student says, well, is it necessary, though? If one's enlightened, why does the master have to give the transmission? If he's already enlightened, what's the purpose of it? Is it da-da-da-da-da? And Suzuki Roshi cuts him off and says, it's a cover. A cover, like a lid. Student says, is it symbolic? Suzuki Roshi says, if you have no cover, the food will become dusty more and more. It's like a pot lid. The food will become dusty. If you know, it's almost 3,000 years since the Buddha passed away, and transmission, while it's handed down through the ancestors, it will become very dusty unless you put a cover on it. That's Dharma. Dharma is not just the written scripture. That's transmission. So transmission will be handed down from warm hand to warm hand, from body to body, from person to person. That's transmission. That's Dharma, or a cover. You might want to neglect the cover. I don't want the cover. If I have a pan and food, that's enough. But for a while, it is so, but then it will get stale. It will go bad quite soon if you don't cover it. So, when you receive transmission, you know, it's not just a symbol. It's a cover. Funny metaphor, huh?
I mean, I guess that's like family style.
Yeah. And he goes on, I think the next point is, he says, you know, we have many rituals. And then he goes on about that. So, the family style, the forms of that embody the style aren't really the Dharma, but they're not really the food, but they're this cover. And if you don't put the cover of the like forms and practices on the food of the true inconceivable signless Dharma, then it gets stale.
Mm. Nurturance,
yeah,
it warm,
that's true.
It,
yeah.
Clean.
Mm-hmm.
Viable,
yeah.
Kind of like
yep. Yeah.
Almost more like a container than a cover.
Yeah, a container. Mm-hmm. I think I could say that too. And the forms are like a container. So even just for sashin, we could say there's truly what sashin is this inconceivable vastness. We don't know what it is, actually. Just sitting here, all the Buddhas in the 10 directions, as innumerable as the sands of the Ganges, can't measure the virtue of one person, Zazen. But they can measure and appreciate the lid that's like the way we ring the bells and offer the incense, and it's quite hard. You know, this inconceivable vastness, that's not very hard. But the form of sashin is hard, right? To keep sitting here with this painful body, sweating. But that's part of the family style. It's like the lid. It keeps the inconceivable food fresh. And I think he's referring partly to this kind of like the ritual transmission thing. Because the student's saying, well, if the person already gets it, why do you have to like give him something? And what you're giving him is not, he's already got it. He doesn't need it. But you're giving him the lid to cover what that student already has and what actually everybody has already. All equally nourished. That's the relationship of teacher and student. In that way, we have to cover our dharma. That's the meaning of the cover. So sometimes when I become lonely, I talk about transmission with Reverend Katagiri. Suzuki Hiroshi. I picture these old guys, right? Like, no, you know, it's too new in America for people to get this thing. It's 1965, right? I think that was the year that San Francisco Zen Center started, 1965. There were Westerners practicing for a few years, at least, before that. But I think that's when they're really like, we're going to start our own thing now. So he said, when I get lonely, I talk with him about this because it's such an intimate thing. It's so nice to talk about with someone who understands. And I say, when will American people understand the meaning of transmission? It may be, and he says, it will take pretty long time for you to understand the full meaning of transmission. Were you going to say something?
Well, I was thinking about that other father find that this guy couldn't be transmitted through the letters. And
Definitely appreciate the Dharma. Just like if we hear Shakyamuni Buddha's sutra and we really resonate, like, yes, I want to practice like that. Or it's kind of like a transmission from Shakyamuni Buddha, direct. And yet, it's a little different. In a way, we get a lid from Shakyamuni Buddha too, because we have some forms that he offered, but we didn't get them directly from him. So I think part of the lid is that, sometimes when we eat Orioki meals on the floor here, at the end of the row, we first take the lid off the pot and we pass it down from warm hand to the end of the row. We don't just throw it.
It also keeps other stuff from falling in.
Ah.
You know what I mean?
Yes. This is really interesting. That's a very good
approach. Because if I, you know, we all have. So I have the Dharma according to Nanette, right? But if I go out on the street with a light sandwich sign teaching the Dharma according to Nanette, it's not that it's not valuable, but I'm not teaching the sutras then. I mean, I think there's something
very interesting in all this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's and the
and how do you keep a purity? You have mm-hmm. to keep, I mean, over thousands of years.
Yeah.
But face to face, not just what I read in the book, and it's not that my understanding isn't valid, but somehow I think that it's super important that there's this seal, that there's this cover.
How do you keep the purity over thousands of years? And that also begs the question, how can we also let it adapt without losing the purity, right? Very dynamic, especially right now, because it's so new in America.
All these things are so up.
Yeah, yeah. And we're like, you know, and people are trying so many things, right? So we're quite Japanese in many ways. Santa Cruz Zen Center is quite traditional. And maybe a lot of people don't come because of that. Adyashanti has wonderful dharma and kind of dropped the he practiced Zen for a long time and but dropped the kind of cover. Felt like it's too restricting, we have to adapt. Very popular.
Well, I wish Ellen were here because, you know, I've heard stories that, you know, after COVID left here, that the group is starting to get a little funky. That other dharmas were dropping in. So, you know, some people in the group want to be a little new agey. Maybe there was a Tibetan affiliation group. And so after COVID had been gone a few years, the board said, well, you know, if we want to keep this Soto place, we better, you know, get a Soto person here.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we brought Catherine.
Mm-hmm.
Get us back a little more subtly intimate.
Chris, were you around at that time?
I would say it differently. Mm. I mean, he was very loosey-goosey about things, I'm sure.
Coben.
The essence was really there. I think for a lot of people.
This sounds like after, I think Patrick's saying after he left here is when things started getting really loose.
I think he really wasn't really made to be a teacher. He was more of an artist, and it was kind of something he did so well, and people clamored all around him too much. It was physically very hard for him. He's so adored and,
I heard sometimes he would try to run away from his students, and even to the point of like someone waiting to talk to him, and he climbed out a bathroom window to escape.
I just like Hollywood star or something. Yeah. When people have some charisma,
Yes, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, he would say things like, you should be ordained, and you're going to ask me, and then he'd disappear. So,
Yeah. I have the sense too, like just from stories that, you know, he was the Eno at Eheiji. So this is like, you know, the supreme model of like total perfection of form, right? Eheiji is like the flagship of form, and the Eno is the one keeping it. So, and that was where when he came from there to America. And so he knew all, he totally was immersed in that world of the cover, you might say, that type of cover. And I had the sense that he got to America and it's like, phew! Ah! Oh. I think.
Probably scary, strong women, too, right?
Yeah!
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think even we have a few of Koban's talks on our website from the Santa Cruz Zen Center. If you scroll back chronologically to the very beginning, and they're nice to just picture him sitting in this room giving these talks. I think it's one of those talks where he's talking a little bit about Eheiji, and he said, so, or somebody asks him, "What was it like practicing Eheiji?" And he says something like, "Oh, horrible, horrible place." "Don't ever, ever go there." I think you're right, like an artist, an artist mind, and very free and unbound after escaping from that kind of a place. And I think that there, yeah, maybe not as much cover as, say, like Suzuki Roshi. It's kind of interesting, actually, that Suzuki Roshi, as I understand the story, invited Koban as the Eno of Eheiji to help set up a cover for Tassajara. Yeah. And he, along with some other people, like Tatsugami Roshi. And so he came and did that, and he's like, "Okay, I'm done with the cover thing. My duty, helping transmit the forms to the monastery in America. Now I want to go to Santa Cruz." Well, that's what he did, right? Santa Cruz and... Oh, yeah. So that was part of it. Maybe did she live out in the area? He came to Los Altos probably before he met anyone. I don't know. Oh, so maybe that's why he came. Yeah.
Isn't there another temple that was
Jikoji? Jikoji came later.
That's still going too, right?
Oh, very nice.
And there's one up the top of the village.
That's it.
That's Jikoji? Yeah. So the Dharma comes through all these forms, and maybe it's a little bit challenging in that lineage because he probably thought he would live longer, and he wasn't, you know, he transmitted Dharma, but in his own artistic kind of way. So then I think you see it now, that Soto Zen is becoming established in America. It's maybe a little bit harder for his descendants because they're like, they're kind of like formalists, and people say like, "Well, what's going on there? Like, how does this, what's, you know?" And standards and all these kinds of things. And so as soon as something gets institutionalized, these issues come up. The lid, like issues have a function, and they also have just like, you know, worldly, practical things. I just brought this along. There was some, I think, a little bit of controversy in our lineage that comes down through Suzuki Roshi and Tenshin Roshi, with this teacher Zen Tatsu Myoyu in between. Richard Baker Roshi. there was some concern at San Francisco Zen Center for a while that, like, there was some political stuff going on. It keeps cropping up in these spiritual groups. And I think he left the Zen Center and felt like it was kind of his. He's like, well, you know, that transmission with Tenshin Roshi wasn't really complete, or something like that. Ever hear that story? It was something like that, that he kind of, some maneuvering to kind of say, because you need this lid to keep this thing going. And so if I say that something was missing there, it's kind of like that you'll need me back. Maybe that was in there. Or maybe it was purely, maybe he really felt like we still have work to do. Because it was only a few months after the transmission ceremony that was technically complete, according to the tradition. But maybe he felt like we still have some work to do in these following months, but then everything blew apart. And, in 2012, he came back to San Francisco Zen Center, and my teacher Tenshin Roshi was meeting with some of the priests and said, "I'm going to meet with him next week or something. And is there anything that you think would be good to bring up with him?" Because they don't meet very often. And I said, I think it's not such a big thing these days, but it seems like there's some murkiness there around this transmission thing. You can see how careful they were in these old days about this, and I think there's some, it's like almost like some dark clouds. It's not really a problem. The practice is going on and transmissions are going on, but there's some, it's like this purity of the lineage thing. There's almost like a cloud in the pure sky that's like, somehow, in some part of my psyche, I feel like this little unease. Can you just ask him, in his compassion, to kind of clarify this? And so he, at this meeting where he came, and I think it's on the talks on the San Francisco website, he says, it was in a ceremony, I think, in the Zen Tatsu Myo, he says, "In the early 80s, I did give transmission to Reb Tenshin Anderson Roshi, and I find being here that there has been some concern about differences we may have about transmission. But any differences are really small. And they are part of the study of the transmission process. Suzuki Roshi said that here in the West, we have to study and evolve the transmission process, and that's what we're doing." So I felt like some joy myself hearing. It's a little obscure, you might say. It could have been more straightforward, but I felt like he's talking about these subtle differences in styles, I think, and saying, we have some stylistic differences, but it was complete transmission. And part of the stylistic differences are what Suzuki Roshi says we should be experimenting with. That's how I understand it.
And I think even a transmitted master can kind of misuse personal power.
Oh, yes. For sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, exactly. Because there's the Dharma, and then there's human old habits and tendencies, and keeping those, being clear about what's going on and clear about what's what, is hard work that's really so necessary to do. Yeah. So after Zen Tatsu Myoyu said this, Tenshin Zenki bowed face to face with him at City Center, and said, "For 30 years I have tried to not let it be cut off, and in the time I have left, I will continue to not let it be cut off." because of your great kindness, great compassion, and great sympathy. And they joined hands and bowed their heads together. So I think people have struggles around these things, and there's all kinds of difficult emotions, I think, in that relationship and many others. And yet people also, despite all that, make the great effort to like come together and let's remember like this, you know, compassionate gift of Dharma, this mysterious gift that we share and support each other. You're welcome. Thanks for listening to this long-winded discussion about transmission. I think, you know, the issues will come up again, but this story seemed really about these particular points, and it was long. May any positive energy generated in this session thus far be offered and spread throughout the universe so the Dharma may be transmitted everywhere. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.